C-167. Number 4A.
Well, we come to the chapter marriage, the third chapter, which has the tone of the world as Christianity. And we see at once that that subject has a lot to do with Christianity, namely with the relationship among people. Marriage is not concerned with the marriage between husband and wife, but it's the marriage between man and God. And God is the center of the universe. It's the sum total of the universe. Therefore, marriage has also a lot to do with the relationship of man to man. Not only with man to God, but mostly now with the relationship of man to man, bringing out, as we always have to bring out, the unity between God and man. So the overall caption for the whole chapter we have in our epitome, that it is spiritual unity in God, brings forth a higher humanity. Perhaps you have noticed that here I have changed the renderings a little bit. I don't speak anymore about the spiritual union of man to God or with God, but of the spiritual unity in God, meaning that God is the sum total of the universe. Therefore, there must be unity in the whole universe of God. And this is the accent that we have here in marriage, that it shows our relationship with the universe and showing that we, if we have those qualities within ourselves that we have depicted in the chapter prayer and atonement and Eucharist, that therefore within ourselves are divine qualities, that that brings about a better humanhood, a better humanity, a better society, so that in the focal point of that chapter is therefore man and man's universe, society, manhood, and the higher nature of man. Always when the accent shifts from God to man, and man is in the focus of the discussion, then we have to do with Christianity. So we can see here very easily how through our unity in God, that is the approach, that's the word, that that brings about a higher Christianity. So we will have to consider here more relationships, the relationships that exist between all mankind. And that marriage is actually a wedding of qualities, not a wedding of people and of mortals, but a wedding of good, spiritual, divine qualities. So that qualities always should blend, that should reflect each other. And whenever spiritual qualities blend, we can't help but a very positive effect, either a higher humanity, a more prosperous humanity, a more impersonal humanity, a harmonious humanity. So the marriage is between qualities that are positive. That is, therefore, the question here of how qualities blend with each other. But the moment we have to do really with the human level of things, whenever we have that state where Atonement and Eucharist has said that the divine must overcome the human at every point, and we see that in the human the downward tendency compensated with upward uplifting tendencies, it's still in the human, but we can see that these qualities always have a positive effect because spiritual qualities blend without restriction. That's the advantage and that's the richness of spiritual qualities, that they blend infinitely and that they can bring out only something higher and higher the more spiritual qualities blend each other. But as it is still in the human, we know that that is not the divine, is not the absolute spiritual, and therefore there comes always up the question of making concessions. We know that we still have to make the concessions of eating and drinking and sleeping and earning our living, etc., so that factors come into a calculation that are not totally divine or totally spiritual, and therefore there also must be a science that governs these relationships between the divine and the human, in order that the human is lifted up more and more, and therefore that the whole chapter shows us that in the measure as qualities blend, in that measure humanity is lifted up. So that you actually have a very nice a triad of principle, life, and truth, namely principle uniting with spiritual qualities, have an effect. What is the effect? That it always brings us higher. That's life. Life always exalts. What does it bring higher? Always the third truth, the humanhood, manhood, humanity, society, civilization, or whatever we can call it. So you hear in your spiritual ear this wonderful triad that says, in the measure that I am using and practicing more and more, that's the concession of more and more, the spiritual qualities that I already have and that I can acquire, the more I do that, I am a world savior, I'm a world factor, because the result of it is that it lifts higher life, and what it is lifted higher is humanity, truth. This is what we see through seven big subjects. And before we take these seven subjects, I would like to first to stress also what Mrs. Eddy says in that introductory paragraph, that we must make concession. Let it be so now, Jesus said, and Mrs. Eddy said that very often, especially in relationship to reorganize the church. She said, let it be so now. She didn't say, let it be so forever, but for a transitional period, let us make concessions. But we must make concessions so that they are not dragging us down, but that they are concessions, as Mrs. Eddy says, for the spiritual good. It must always have an upward trend in it. Now, these concessions are shown in the chapter until at the end she is really asking, are these concessions necessary? Do we really find the final answer to being if we are staying within that realm of making concessions or not? And then finally answers or questions that and gives then the answer in the fourth chapter. So the whole of the third chapter is dealing with these concessions. She says that these concessions are necessary until. It's always until, so as to say they are not eternal. Until, she says, spiritual creation is seen to be intact, is discerned to be intact. Until then, these concessions are right. So she never leaves the goal out of her eyes. She always has that high goal in front of her, namely that the high goal that is spiritualization of being and not a better materiality. So until it is learned that God is the Father of all, until then she allows the concession of generation of mankind, of sexual generation through mankind, but always having in view that is only until we see that the Father is the creator of mankind. Just as Mary could see that and brought forth then the Savior as a higher idea, even in a corporeal body. These concessions are so important because especially the beginner would like to go to the extremes. It's always the wise man that makes concession. The beginner doesn't want to make concession because he feels that he's betraying the idea and he doesn't want to betray the idea. He's so full of enthusiasm and devotion that he says, I'm going to be a good student, I'm not going to make any concessions to matter and to the human. And then he likes to go really off as an absolutist, then breaks down, because absolutism doesn't work on this human plane as such. So let's see also what Mrs. Eddy says in this regard, though it is not in the chapter on marriage, it's from miscellaneous writing, but it's a good rule and a good hint for us, where she says that mortals must first choose between two evils, and of two evils choose the less. You see, this is very, very different than the second day of creation, where we choose between the spiritual and the material, spirit and matter. Here, when it is a question of how far should we make a concession, then she says, between two evils, choose the lesser evil. Or she goes on and says, wisdom in human action begins with what is nearest right. Doesn't begin with what is right, divinely right, which is absolutely right. Says under, which is nearest right, under the circumstances, and thence achieves the ultimate. And thence achieves the ultimate. It is as if she would here say, in her terms, in other terms, we have the chapter on marriage, as choosing the lesser evil of two evils, as having enough wisdom in human action to begin with the nearest right, with the best of the human qualities, and then achieves the ultimate, which she shows in the fourth chapter, in the chapter on Christian Science versus Spiritualism, where the human does no more enter, where we only have to do with God as spirit and the spiritual universe, spiritual idea and spiritual universe. Still, we can see that this transitionary stage of marriage has its value, has its merits, because through the whole text flows that sense of the comparative, not of the superlative. Only at the end she brings in terms that are in the superlative, but mostly it is all in the comparative, because the comparative is that which is nearest right, and not the maximum of good, but nearest good. And so the text is full of terms that bring this out, this improvement out, that it says it is enriching. It is only enriching, it doesn't give the fullness of life. Enriching, promoting, makes more permanent, nobler qualities, higher aims and qualities. You always have really the comparative in it. Therefore, this chapter is so practical and so living for every Christian Scientist, because we all still are on a human and material plane of living and thought. And therefore, we also must have a science that takes care of that transitionary period so as to lead us towards the spiritual good and not towards evil. And so we can see that the beginning and the end of the chapter are of quite a different level. At the beginning of the chapter, she is willing to make all the concession to mortals, to the propagation of mortals and to the human species, whereas at the end of the chapter, really then, she only acknowledges man that is co-existent and co-eternal with God. So that then she asks, is actually God the creator of men, or are people the creator of men? And leaves that question open to be answered in the fourth chapter. Now, what are the seven subjects that we have here in the chapter on marriage? And we take them quickly and always have our ears open for those three categories, for those three terms, so to say, the tone of principle, which says if we are one with the qualities of God, one, to be one is principle, if we are one with the qualities that are higher, that are better, then a second happens, something is being improved, we arise in the scale of being, there is that exaltation that takes place always, and the third always that has to do with men and with manhood and humanhood and civilization and society. So we can ask ourselves, therefore, how can we improve really society and civilization? And the seventh subject would give us the answer. And would say in the very first subject that spiritual unity in mind assures through being law-abiding. Here you have the tone of mind. If you are law but abiding, if you are one with law, then we are law-abiding. If we have a unity with the concept of law, then that brings about an advanced civilization. You can hear it, advanced is life, and civilization has to do with manhood, with truth. So by being law-obedient and abiding by the legal and moral provisions, by keeping the commandments, as she said, to be true to the covenant, fidelity to the commandments, that is a quality of mind within us. We are law-abiding. God is not law-abiding. God is law. God doesn't have to abide by law. So you see, she appeals to the qualities within us. It says, if we are law-abiding, then we will advance civilization. And we know that from history, that the moment there is anarchy, therefore there is no more law in a nation, that nation just falls to pieces after a short time. Then we come to a second subject, that spirit, where we have spiritual unity in spirit that enriches the human nature. You can see spirit, the richness, the substance of human nature, through the union of pure qualities. So we have here really the pure qualities. If we are united with pure qualities, then that has an effect as life, namely, and it enriches life, the fullness of life, and enriches what? The whole human nature, truth. What are those spiritual qualities which should unite within us? Here she brings up naturally the most important one, that each individual should unite within himself masculine and feminine qualities, that he should have a masculine and feminine mind, and not just half of that, either masculine or feminine, but that he has to educate himself in bringing out in his experience, in his life, as well masculine as feminine qualities. This is not something that is given to everybody right from birth. Quite on the contrary, we are brought up either as a boy or a girl with masculine qualities or with feminine qualities, and we even criticize a girl when it is taking on human masculine qualities, and we despise a man if he has feminine qualities. Well, this is, that belongs really to the second record of creation. Really, we should see that the scientific man must see that he has a perfect balance of masculine and feminine qualities. And to see that if we have both together, that they strengthen each other, that they protect each other, and that they bring a higher quality about, which one wouldn't have just with one or the other quality. Therefore, both sex, she said, should be loving, should be pure, should be tender, should be strong, should have courage, be pure and true, should have those wonderful sense of affection and goodness and virtue. These are the qualities that she brings up. But we know that if we list up those qualities which are masculine and those which are feminine, we will find out that we may miss quite a lot of the masculine and the feminine qualities. And it is, so to say, a duty of every young student that he is aware of these qualities, that he makes a list of these qualities and begins to be consciously conscious that as a man, as a creation of God, he can take possession of all those qualities. I did that right in the beginning in the 30s when I was a university student. I made a list of these qualities and was every day going over them and contemplating them and seeing which one are missing within me, that patience was missing in me, that I had too much of the masculine quality, which was always trying to push forward with the elbows, etc., not having the woman quality of being patient and be able to wait, and to have for a man to have motherly qualities is not always natural. And so if one is aware of that, what constitute feminine qualities and masculine qualities, then we have done the first step. And the second step then is to acquire, to make this quality one's own. Because then, it says, that has the tone of life and truth in it, it enriches the human nature. We suddenly begin to see that we are not only 50% a man, but that we can be 100% man, but that is only possible through that blending of masculine and feminine qualities. Then we go through a third subject that Mrs. Eddy takes up, a soul, where she says that spiritual unity in soul promotes through what? Through selflessness and unity of interest. You can at once recognize these qualities as qualities of soul when one knows the synonymous terms. And that if we have that selflessness and that unity of interest or identity of interest, that the happiness of human partnership is established. So that promotes really the human partnership. So again, we have other qualities that are seen that men and women need, namely that sense of mutuality that goes right through the text, of mutual freedom, of mutual attention, mutual compromises, mutual understanding, because we need unselfishness, and that alone gives us moral freedom. These are the qualities that Mrs. Eddy is now taking up as soul and says that we should see that man is not an ego, a personal ego, or has an ego per se, by itself, but if soul is the one great ego, then we can see that not everybody has its ego. Therefore, that there is only one ego in the universe, which has as its consequence that each supports the other, that we have a mutual interest, that the whole of mankind has a mutual interest, that the interests are not going against each other, that there is no competition between these qualities, but that every quality supports the other qualities, protects the other qualities, acknowledges the other qualities, welcomes the other qualities, so that there is a mutual exchange of qualities. And that promotes a human partnership. Only in this way one can have a partnership that is of a higher level, that does not break down under the next under the next pressure, but that can be held up even if such pressure would come into a partnership. If we see we are one world, one mankind, one universe, then we see that there is only a oneness of interest, an identity of interest. Then we go further to the next subject of principle. And here we find other qualities, namely that spiritual unity in principle makes, now through which qualities of principle? Through a scientific attitude, makes what? Human relationships more harmonious and permanent. So here we have again mankind as a mankind of relationships. These relationships should be enduring, should be permanent. How can one make those relationships more permanent? Through the ideas or through the qualities of principle. Principle which says, act according to principle, don't act according to personal sense, to personal interest. Only on that ground we can have spiritual unity and not try to have personal unity or unity between people. Unity between people sooner or later always breaks up. Only when we build a relationship with people on a common basis of being faithful to one principle or having one interest to be in accord with principle, only then can we have a relationship that lasts. So this is another great point, that impersonality between people. And finally, or not finally, further, we come to life, the next subject, which says spiritual unity in life brings forth through what qualities of life? Through exalted and refined affections. And what do they bring forth? A higher what? A nobler. What kind? A nobler human species. So here she even is taking up the subject, what have we to do in order that our children are better children, that we can improve on the progenies and on the generation of people, how to improve the human species as such. Can we do something, or is that left just to the biological circumstances? Is that just left to sex? To what is it left? What can really help a higher species?